No one is trying to give your kids edibles for Halloween. Knock that bullshit off. Hey everybody, welcome back to the Ninja Nerd Warrior podcast for Sunday, October 31st, 2021. Happy Halloween. I am your host, Greg Hernandez. And first off, start off with a classic. We have Dokken Dream Warriors from Nightmare on Elm Street 3. Dream Warriors. Now, I am a huge fan of the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise, except for that reboot. That was a piece of shit. But other than that, and it got to the point where, I mean, the first one was terrifying. My favorites, here are my favorites. The first one, obviously. The last one, Wes Craven's New Nightmare. Both of them, Freddy was absolutely terrifying in both of those movies. And the middle ones are kind of a toss-up because there were some of those where Freddy just became a one-line actor. He became Schwarzenegger in Batman and Robin. And so I prefer the ones where Freddy Krueger is just creepy as shit. So anyway, this one actually not touching on the Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. I want to start with one of the biggest bullshit Halloween urban legends. All right, this one's been popular. I did some research. This one's been popular for the last 4 years. Okay, here it is. Ready? Write this down. Nobody is giving your damn kids edibles on Halloween. Knock that shit off. It has never, ever happened. Never happened. I don't give a shit what you read on Facebook. I don't care what your local news outlet has put out. Bullshit, okay? It has never happened. Now, like I said, I went and did some research. And by research, I mean sitting on the toilet looking on my phone. Do you realize this urban legend has been around since the 1890s? It has. This damn thing is over 130 years old. Obviously, not the edibles part. We're getting to that. But it goes back to like the 1890s, 1900s, where they put out this bullshit about poison candy and kids dying from poison Halloween candy. You know how many documented cases there have been of poison Halloween candy? One. There's been one case. And I'll get to that. Yeah, don't get ahead of me. We're going to take these one at a time, okay? Like I said, I did some research, and this goes back to the 1890s, but I can't find where it started. I can't find what happened, where this damn thing came from. No idea, all right? But the first case I found was in 1959, a California dentist by the name of William Shine gave candy-coated laxatives to trick-or-treaters. Okay. Laxatives, not lethal. Don't get me wrong, that's a dick move. That's an absolutely dick move. Just turn your lights off. Don't answer the door. But no, this guy had to be an asshole and put candy-coated laxatives in trick-or-treaters' bags. But laxatives, not poison. Now, in 1964, we had a Long Island woman who gave out packages of inedible objects to children that she believed were too old to be trick-or-treating. Get this shit. She was giving out steel wool, dog biscuits, and ant buttons. I had to look that shit up. What's an ant button? Basically, it's ant poison. But it had the giant word poison on it. Okay, so no kid ate it. All right, again, that is a massive dick move, but it led to zero cases of kids being poisoned, kids being injured. Never happened, okay? Oh, by the way, she was caught and she was charged and pled guilty to endangering children, okay? But again, no children were harmed. Okay, so the first two cases were off the bat, nothing happened. No children injured, no children poisoned, nobody died. This third case, this is where I seriously started to regret researching this shit, okay? Because we have a 5-year-old boy in the Detroit area named Kevin Tostin, who died. So we have our first dead kid. All right. What'd the kid die of? What was it, poison candy? Razor blades and a Snickers? No. The kid found his uncle's heroin and ate it. That's a thing. He found his uncle's heroin stash, ate it, and died. And here's the part where my stomach started to turn. The family, trying to protect the uncle, lied to police and said the heroin was sprinkled on Halloween candy. Fucking disgusting. Think about this. A 5-year-old is dead after finding his uncle's heroin stash and eating it. And the family goes to protect the uncle and says, yeah, the heroin was mixed in with his Halloween candy. So, we have our first dead kid, but we still have zero cases of poisoned Halloween candy. Now, moving through the decades, I got excited for this one because this is the first case that I actually remember. This is 1982. Does anyone remember the great Chicago Tylenol freakout of 1982? I'll explain. In 1982, in the Chicago area, there was some cases of somebody went into pharmacies in Chicago and they were switching out Tylenol bottles with stuff that they had brought in, Tylenol bottles they had brought in, with cyanide capsules. You know cyanide? The shit the Russian spies take with them, so if they're caught, they just pop a tablet and they're fucking dead? Yes. But whoever did this was putting Tylenol, basically cyanide in Tylenol bottles, going into pharmacies, switching those shits out, and you had like half a dozen people die from cyanide tablets inside of Tylenol bottles. Now here's where I started laughing my ass off. The story hits the news, and this becomes a national story. Like, this didn't stay in the Chicago area. The news went all over the country. And news outlets all over the country said, hey, be careful. Cyanide could end up in your kid's Halloween candy. Are you shitting me? Wait, there were no sick kids, no dead kids, no documented cases of cyanide in the candy. You just had a bunch of dipshit news anchors going, hey, it could happen. Never know. Okay, so I have taken you through 130 years of urban legend. I have given 5 documented cases. So far, we have 0 cases of poisoned Halloween candy. Here is the one case. The one case I found of poisoned Halloween candy resulting in a dead kid. 1974, Deer Park, Texas. An 8-year-old boy dies because he ingested a cyanide-laced pixie stick that he got trick-or-treating. Okay, we covered cyanide, Russian poison for the spies. All right, there was ground-up cyanide in a pixie stick. Kid eats the pixie stick, dead kid. All right? Obviously, dead kid, there's going to be an autopsy, investigation, people are going to lose their shit, okay, because this is 1974. At this point, this urban legend has been around for 94 years. So people are freaking the fuck out. See? All those stories, it's true. Happened right here in Texas. The police investigation finds that Mr. Ronald Clark O'Brien was the man who intentionally gave out the cyanide-laced pixie stick in the Halloween candy. Who was Ronald Clark O'Brien, you might ask? The dead kid's father. The fucking guy poisoned his own kid for insurance money. That piece of shit had several kids. Tried to poison them all the exact same way. He put cyanide-laced pixie sticks in all of their candy. And this kid, the 8-year-old, is the only one that ate it and died. So, you know what? I hope Ronald Clark O'Brien is dead and burning in hell right now. I do. I seriously do. And, well, it's Texas, so there's a good chance that fucker's dead. But, point being, this urban legend has been around for 130 years. There has been one case of poisoned Halloween candy, and the Halloween candy came from the kid's fucking dad. All right? So knock this shit off. Never in the history of ever has there ever been a proven case that a kid died from Halloween candy he got from a stranger. Okay? That being said, it's never been proven that anyone has tried to kill kids that weren't theirs with Halloween candy. So it stands to reason nobody is going to give out edibles to your damn kids for Halloween, all right? And I can prove that. I can prove that you will not find THC edibles in Halloween candy, because those shits are expensive. Have you ever tried to buy edibles? Those shits are expensive as shit. I've heard. I'm a flower guy. But those things go like anywhere from $10 to $30 a package. Nobody's giving your damn kid a $10 Halloween candy. Screw that shit. Okay? And let's say, hypothetically, against all odds, an edible ends up in your kid's Halloween candy. What's the worst thing that's going to happen? Fucking kid's going to go to sleep the first time you tell him without actually like putting up a fight. Like, I don't want to go to sleep. No, that kid's out. Rest the night. You're welcome. Fucking bullshit. That one always cracks me up. Every year, I always see that. Watch out, they're going to put edibles in your kids. Shut up. No, they're not. Dumbass. And you know what? The great majority of you people that are bitching about, yeah, they're going to put THC edibles in Halloween candy. You know, Christmas is right around the corner, and you know damn well you're all going to be in the Walmart parking lot looking for the tamale lady. Don't shut up. All paranoid that your kid's going to be eating tainted candy, but you'll buy tamales from Abuelita with one good eye and three missing fingers. Guys are dumb shits. So consider that my public service announcement for Halloween. Nobody's giving your kids edibles. Knock that shit off. I will say that Halloween, or the month of October, has been incredibly motivating because I've actually done a show every week for the past month. That hasn't happened in like 8 months. It really hasn't. So, crap. Now I gotta find some Thanksgiving shows to do. Shit. But I wanted to close these, I want to close out the October shows. I am going to talk about my favorite underrated horror movies. Now, I know if you go look at all these shows, there's a lot of shit I left out. Totally understand. I did horror comedy and I left out Beetlejuice. Not intentionally. I thought about it afterward. But what I wanted to do now is I wanted to talk about my favorite scary movies, my favorite underrated scary movies, because anybody can come on and talk about Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, the Saw franchise, all that shit. Yeah, we know about those. Texas Chainsaw Massacre, all classics, all right? I actually sat down with my girlfriend the other day and watched Psycho, like the original black and white 1960s.
Mother, oh God, mother!
Yeah, that Psycho. Such a great movie, really underrated, slow as shit. I will say that, like the first 30-40 minutes is slow as shit, but after that it's so good, really good, highly worth going back and checking out. But I wanted to put together a small list of some of the most underrated horror movies that I've ever seen. And the first one I wanted to start with was, have you guys ever seen The Fourth Kind? This movie, not gonna lie, scared the shit out of me, all right? And here's why this scared the shit out of me. Mila Jovovich, who you know from the Resident Evil franchise, she plays the main character, and she just, okay, the movie starts, it's out of focus, she just walks up to the camera, and she drops this on me.
I'm actress Mila Jovovich, and I will be portraying Dr. Abigail Tyler in The Fourth Kind. This film is a dramatization of events that occurred October 1st through the 9th of 2000 in the northern Alaskan town of Nome. To better explain the events of the story, the director has included actual archive footage throughout the film. This footage was acquired from Nome psychologist Dr. Abigail Tyler, who has personally documented over 65 hours of video and audio materials during the time of the incident. To better protect their privacy, we have changed the names and professions of many of the people involved. Every dramatized scene in this movie is supported by either archived audio, video, or as it was related by Dr. Tyler during extensive interviews with the director. In the end, what you believe is yours to decide. Please be advised that some of what you're about to see is extremely disturbing.
So right off the bat, the main character, the actress, just told me, hey, this shit really happened. And I'm in the theater going, whoa, wait, what? Whoa, this is real? I thought this was just a creepy little, like, UFO abduction movie. You're telling me this shit really happened. So it really puts you just, from the beginning, it just kicks you in the face. And again, this movie is very slow developing. So the synopsis of this movie is that Dr. Abigail Tyler moved to Nome, Alaska with her husband. They're both psychologists. And he was doing a sleep study. And then one day just puts a gun in his mouth and blows his head off. No warning signs, nothing. She never saw it coming. She said everything was normal. They had dinner that night. They went to bed. They had sex. And then he just up and offs himself. And so the movie picks up with her after, you know, her husband's already dead. She's got two kids. And she just decides, well, you know, to honor his memory, I'm going to finish this sleep study that my husband started. So she starts talking to his patients, going through his notes, listening to all of the like interview tapes and everything. And she starts finding out that they're all having like these weird dreams, the same dream, the exact same dream of like somebody outside of their window is watching them, but they're describing it as like an owl. But that owl is in everybody's dream. And she's like, what the hell? Like, she doesn't figure out why like five different patients are having the same nightmare. And then one day, one of the patients loses his shit. Like, cops are called to his house. And from what I'm understanding, Nome, Alaska is this super small town in Alaska that's in the middle of nowhere. There aren't even roads to this town. You have to take one of those like puddle jumper Buddy Holly Richie Valens planes to get into this damn town. And so everybody knows each other because they're stuck there. And one night, one of these patients loses his shit and starts waving a gun at his family, like his wife, his kids. He starts talking about, they're coming. I want to protect you, but I can't. He's hysterical. This guy's absolutely hysterical. Cops are called and they're showing this to you. Like, this is dash cam footage. And so right off the bat, like, I'm like, oh shit, this is real. Like, this is an episode of Cops. I'm watching dash cam footage of the cops are outside. This guy is by the windows waving a gun. They called Dr. Tyler in, and it's up to her to try and talk this guy down. And he keeps telling her, they're coming. I want to protect my family, but I can't. And he's waving the gun around. And as much as she tries to talk him down, he turns the gun on his family, his kids. You watch all this. You watch him shoot his kids, shoot his wife. Well, you don't watch him shoot the kids. It's all implied. But you see shadows. So you know what happened. Kills the kids, kills the wife, kills himself. This is the first 20 minutes of the movie. And I'm just like, you have my attention. And as this movie goes on, she's trying to figure out why this guy lost his shit. He's having the same dreams as everybody else. They're seeing this owl from the outside. And she starts doing, like, she goes on with these interviews. She goes on with these therapy sessions. She starts putting him under hypnosis what do they call it? Regression? Like memory regression therapy or whatever the hell it's called. I probably should know all this. I'm going back to school for psychology. But anyway, what she starts doing is she starts realizing that these people have been abducted. These people have been abducted. And again, what this movie had a trick which scared the living shit out of me. So you're watching the actors portray this therapy session, this hypnosis session, and the screen shrinks down and the picture moves into like the upper left hand corner, and in the lower right hand corner it shows you the actual footage of this therapy session. So you're watching the actors portray this, and you're watching like videotape, like 1985 VHS fucking videotapes, which cements this in your head. This is real. You're not watching a movie. This shit is real. And these people, as they start realizing that they've been abducted and they've been experimented on, the amount of fear that these people start experiencing, it's a whole... To say I was uncomfortable watching this is a ridiculous understatement. Because now, this isn't a movie. This is real. These things actually happened. And you have all these people just terrified. And this goes on throughout the movie. And it's just... it's building. Like, it's just absolutely building. And then here's where this movie just, oh my God. Dr. Tyler is home with her two kids, and there's a cop car outside. Because again, small town, they all know each other, but there's a cop car outside, and again, you're watching dash cam footage. The dash cam is facing Dr. Tyler's house. And they're screaming. The cop gets out of the car, runs into the house because he just hears screaming. All of a sudden, you see like a shadow. You see something come over, because this is the middle of the night. You see like something dark fly over the top of the house, and then the video just goes all distorted, and all you get are screams. So you can't see what's going on, but you're hearing the cop scream, Dr. Tyler scream. And Dr. Tyler's daughter, who's maybe 9, like she has 2 kids. I want to say they were like 9 and 12. Like the son was 12, the daughter was 9. And the next thing you find out, the daughter's missing. The daughter's missing. And the cop's like, what happened? Abby, where's she at? Abigail, where is your daughter? What did you do with her? And she's freaking out, telling the cops she's been taken. And the cops are like, by who? Who took her? And it's just this giant suspense. Like, here's where this gets ridiculous. Kind of ridiculous to explain, but if you watch it, it's amazing. Because she's trying to explain that her kid was abducted by a UFO. And the cops believe her about as much as you would believe somebody else telling you their kid was abducted by a UFO. The cops are going, bullshit. What did you do with the kid? And so she's taken into custody. She's questioned. And here's the best part. You never find out what happened to the kid. She's never brought back. And the rest of the movie is Dr. Abigail Tyler, just this poor woman is falling apart. Husband killed himself. Daughter's missing. The whole town thinks she did something to the kid and ditched the body. And it keeps going, and she's digging into these abductions. And then as the movie goes on, you start realizing her patients aren't the only ones that have been abducted. So has she. She starts going into memory regression and realizing that there was, at the night her husband killed himself, there was somebody else in that room. There was somebody else there. She, for whatever reason, just repressed that memory. The husband experienced something just absolutely horrific. He couldn't handle it. That's why he kills himself. And you find out that she's been getting visited ever since the husband killed himself. And so she decides, no, I'm going to figure out what the hell's going on. So there's another doctor in the town, or who flies into the town, and she tells him, no, I want you to take me through a full regression. I need to find out what happened to my husband, what happened to my daughter. And so they film the regression. And as they're filming it, she's sitting on the couch, and she just starts having what I can only describe as a seizure. And of course, the camera goes all, the screen goes all distorted like it did before, like when whatever it was over her house. And you get kind of blurry, distorted visions of Abigail in a hypnotic state, start to levitate off the couch. Like, she levitates about 2 or 3 feet off the couch. Her body goes into convulsions. They said at one point she dislocated her own jaw, broke her own back. And then at the end of the movie, you get a video of the actual Abigail Tyler being interviewed by some college professor basically somebody just trying to tell her story, like questioning her what happened, and she's sticking to the story. No, this really happened. This isn't Mila Jovovich anymore. This is the actual Abigail Tyler. And as the camera pans out, you see that she's confined to a wheelchair. So whatever happened to her, like, she legit broke her own back. She convulsed, broke her own back, somehow levitating 3 feet above the couch. She's now, like, partial quadriplegic. Like, okay. Anyway, check this movie out. It's called The Fourth Kind. And this movie here is... And just when I thought this movie was done, just when I think this is done, as they are rolling the credits, you hear they have actual 911 calls of people reporting strange lights and something in the sky. And these people are freaked out. These people are absolutely freaked out. And what they're doing is, of course, they're rolling the credits, but off in basically the margins of the screen, I guess, it would show you the date, the time, and the city and state that particular call is coming from. They just kept playing one after another. There had to be at least 12 to 15 of these. And they just kept giving time, date, city, state, time, date, city, state, time, date, city, state. And here's where we freaked the fuck out. And by we, it is me, my girlfriend at the time, my buddy John, and I believe they were married at the time, so his wife. And the thing that freaked him out, was, I think I've said this before on another show, we used to drive, because John and I wrestled. John actually trained me. John's the guy who trained me. And we used to drive from Bakersfield, California to Hayward, California, twice a month for 2 years. We're working for APW. And if you've ever driven the I-5 from Bakersfield to Hayward, it's middle of nowhere. It's most of that drive is all farmland. There's nothing out there. And all of a sudden, we're watching, we're listening to all of these. We stayed throughout the credits just to listen to these 911 calls. And John looks at me and goes, "Hey, did I ever tell you about the time I thought I saw a UFO?" And I'm like, "What?" I think he's fucking with me, because that's John. John's just the guy that's going to mess with you, and you can never tell when it's a joke or not. So I just assumed it was always a joke. And John goes, "Yeah, bro, I was coming back from Hayward, did a show up in Hayward." He said he's coming back, and on the I-5, traffic is stopped for miles. It is just at a standstill. It's like 2 in the morning, and he doesn't know why. Like, what the hell? Is it a car accident? What's going on? Why are there this many cars on the freeway at 2 a.m. on the I-5? What the hell? And he says he looks up and there are lights in the sky just floating there. And every car had stopped because they're staring at this damn thing. This was about 05, 06, I think. And so at this point, I'm like, all right, whatever, because I'm just convinced John's screwing with me. John's making this shit up. And goddamn it, I swear, maybe 2 or 3 minutes after he finishes telling that story, you get on the screen, on the movie screen, July something, 2006, Tracy, California, and it plays the 911 call from Bay. Okay, so we're thinking this was the same call from the night John was on the freeway watching this shit. And we both just eyes bugged out of our head, jaw dropped, and we looked at each other. Again, I thought he was screwing with me, and it was almost on cue that they play that 911 call, which may or may not have been the time he was on the freeway, but it was around the same time. We can't say for sure if it was at the that was the exact same call, but he said that was around the same time. So check this movie out, called The Fourth Kind, and like I said, it was the actual footage that just freaked me the fuck out. And then about 2 or 3 years later, I found out the actual footage and the police dash cam footage and everything, faked. They faked all of it. I went, oh, you bastards. I wished I didn't know. I wished I had never found out that it was faked, because they had me going. The whole time they had me going, I was like, damn it. But anyway, Fourth Kind, check it out. It's awesome. Okay, so next movie I want to talk to, again, super underrated. When I ask people, what's your favorite horror movie, I never hear this one. Never. This is a movie called Event Horizon. 1997, starring Sam Neill from Jurassic Park. Lawrence Fishburne actually starred and wrote this movie. Movie was directed by Paul W.S. Anderson. This movie scared the shit out of me. If you're raised Catholic, this movie will pucker your butthole. No doubt about it. So, this movie's set in the year 2040, so it's not that far off. We've colonized the moon, we've colonized several planets, and they basically build this ship. The ship has been built to travel further out into the galaxy. And the ship is called the Event Horizon. It's got an 18-person crew on it. And on its maiden voyage, ship blows up. No idea what happened to it. Everyone's like, they don't know what went wrong. Nothing. 7 years later, this ship shows back up out around Neptune, like at the far end of our solar system. So Lawrence Fishburne is the captain of the Lewis and Clark. It's an expedition ship, and they basically, the government, pulls Lawrence Fishburne and says, hey, put together a crew. The Event Horizon's back. Go figure out what happened to this thing. So he puts together a crew, just pulls these guys off of shore leave. You feel bad for them. But there's also a member of the crew, Dr. William Weir, played by Sam Neill from Jurassic Park. So on the way out there, Fishburne briefs his crew that says, hey, the Event Horizon's back. And everyone's like, no way. No. That ship's destroyed. What do you mean it's back? And he says, yeah, that's what happened. It's back. Don't know why it's back. Don't know where it's been. But that's what our job, to go figure out what the hell happened. And Dr. Weir, Sam Neill, he explains to him that he was part of the team that built the ship. The ship is powered by a gravity well that it enables the ship to travel faster than light. And the crew is going like, no, faster than light travels, that's not a thing. It's impossible. He says, well, not really. And he explains to him that the gravity well drive of the ship bends space-time, so that instead of actually traveling from point A to point B, point A and point B are the same point at one time, and the ship basically just travels through basically a black hole from one spot to the other. But the first time that they activated the gravity well, ship vanished. They don't know why. They don't know what happened. Government put out a cover story that the ship exploded, but really, government has no fucking clue. So, ship is back, sends these guys out to figure out what happened. They get out to the ship, and they find out this thing is in pristine condition. It is, like, not a scratch on it, so for a ship that exploded, it's holding up pretty well. Gravity is still capable, power is still capable, there's still air on it, but all that shit's got to be reactivated. But crew's gone. So they have no idea what happened to the people on the ship. So they board the ship and they start looking around. The gravity is deactivated. They got to turn all their shit back on. And as they're kind of, you know, checking out the ship, kind of scouting around, a body, like a mutilated body, just floats past them with the eyes ripped out. So you're just like, what the shit happened to this ship? What happened to this crew? What's going on? And they start recovering logs. They find a audio recording. And the recording is just a jumble of screams and moans and like shrieks. And somebody says in Latin, save me. They say it in Latin, save me. So like, what the hell's going on? And as the different members of the crew check out different parts of the ship, you have actor James Noseworthy, who is one of the greatest names of all times. I'll never forget that name from the 90s. James Noseworthy. He checks out basically engineering, and he finds the gravity drive. And the gravity drive is this big black metal sphere with rings just rotating, with metal rings rotating around it. It looks awesome. It just looks dark and gothic and like it would be in a Danzig video. It's awesome. And all of a sudden, the rings align, the sphere opens, and there is just this basically black hole. It looks like fluid, but it's dark and reflective, and Noseworthy's like, what the fuck is this? And he like kind of puts his finger in it to touch it, and it yanks him in. And he's got like a tether on. He's got like a tether attached to the belt of his spacesuit, and you just hear a scream. He gets pulled in. Another member of the crew just pulls on the tether and pulls him out, and when he comes out, he's just frozen. He is catatonic. I mean, just the look of fear on his face, and he keeps talking about the darkness. I've seen the darkness. And you're like, what the shit? And then that's it. He just goes catatonic. So they put him in sick bay, and they're trying to figure out what the hell happened. And now the crew just tears into Weir, like, what the hell's going on? And so Weir starts to explain that the ship, like I said, the ship doesn't travel faster than light. It creates a single singularity and basically a black hole from one spot to another. And the theory is that the ship passed into a different dimension, a hell dimension, a dimension of pure chaos, and now the ship is back. So the crew starts freaking out, and they basically tell him, listen, you broke the laws of nature by trying to create a ship that travels faster than light, and now this ship has been God knows where, and we don't know if it brought something back with it. And they're arguing about all this shit, and all of a sudden they hear an alarm. Well, James Noseworthy is out of his coma, and he's locked himself in an airlock, and he's going to commit suicide by launching himself into space without a spacesuit. And he does. Launches himself out there. They manage to get him back before he, you know, get him back inside before he dies, but he is just ridiculously injured. Like, you don't know if this guy's going to make it or not. So now they're just like, fuck this ship. We're just going to salvage what we can and get the hell out of here. They start pulling logs, they start pulling just equipment, everything to get off this ship, and they find, as they're pulling the logs, they find a video. And the video shows basically what happened after the ship vanished, after the gravity well was activated, ship vanishes. This crew turned primal. They turned feral, and this video just shows self-mutilation, torture, it shows sodomy. The crew turned on each other and basically tore each other apart. And the video ends with that captain who is just mutilated, and he is talking to the camera, and he says into the camera, remember when I said that the message said save me but in Latin? No, they misheard it. The man says in Latin, save yourself from hell, and he's holding his own eyeballs. And at this point, they said, fuck this, we're out of here. And Sam Neill is saying, no, we can't leave. And they told him, they said, you know what? You don't want to leave the ship? Fucking stay here. You can stay here with your ship. And he says, I'm already home, and just disappears. He's creepy. Oh my God, he's creepy in this movie. And he basically starts killing off the crew one by one. Like, he just dissects this guy. This movie's gross. I will say that. I'm not a big fan of gross horror, but this movie, it gets a pass for some reason. Maybe because it was the first one I ever saw that was this graphic. But as the movie goes on, you find out that Sam Neill, whatever is living inside this ship, is now part of him. And he said, he basically launches this plot. He activates a gravity well, and he says, yeah, we're going back to where this ship was. And Fishburne and the rest of the crew is like, bullshit, we are. did you see what happened to the people that were here before? Like, no, they're getting the shit out of here. And the movie ends with Lawrence Fishburne sacrificing himself. They blow the ship in half. The ship is designed to blow in half, and the forward decks can be used as a lifeboat. The back of the ship is where the gravity well is. Lawrence Fishburne sacrifices himself, blows the ship. There's only like three remaining members of the crew left. And Sam Neill and Lawrence Fishburne are sucked back into this hell dimension. That's where the movie ends. But it has one of those trick endings that is the ship alive? Is it not? It's really, I can't do justice. I cannot do justice to how good this movie is. Besides, it's also 5:30 in the morning. But check it out. It's Event Horizon. Seriously, one of my favorite, just underrated horror movies. It's great. Which brings me to my final underrated horror movie. And this one's underrated because the first movie was good. The six they made after it sucked. Paranormal Activity. 2007, written and directed by Oren Peli and starring a bunch of nobodies. But that's what made this movie great. That's what made this awesome. Oren decided, hey, I'm going to write and direct a horror movie, and just asked his friends, hey, you guys want to make a horror movie? And they did. This movie was made on a $15,000 budget, and to date has grossed over $193 million. It is by far the most profitable movie in motion picture history. That's a thing. And here's what I love about this movie, okay? This movie came out about the same time as like Saw 3. And what I loved is I'm not a big fan of the Saw, Hostel, like the torture porn horror movies. I'm not a big fan. Give me subtle. Give me creepy. And that's what this movie was. Okay, this movie was slow to develop. Oh my god, this movie was so ridiculously slow, but it was creepy, and it just kept building and building. And the whole thing, the movie starts, you have Micah Sloat, who, oh, this guy was a douche. This guy was absolute douche. I wanted him dead by the end of the movie. I was like, would you kill this guy already? And they did. But Micah is explaining that his girlfriend says there's something in the house. She's getting really weird feelings. He's getting these vibes, and there's something in the house. So Micah goes out and buys this ridiculously expensive video camera, and he is going to record them sleeping. Not entirely sure why, but that's what he was going to do. And he even implies that they were going to make a sex tape. That's why he bought this camera. And that's a dude. That's such a dude thing to do. But so it's established that Katie, there's something in the house. She's getting these really weird vibes. So Micah gets a camera, and he's going to record everything. And so sets a camera up and records them sleeping several nights in a row, and nothing happens. Nothing happens. And then all of a sudden you start seeing, like, things moving. They set the camera up, and you see, like, the bed sheet just kind of blow up, and there's no wind. You see the bedroom door just slightly move one way, stop, go the other way. You see a light down the hall turn on, turn off. So you know there's something in this house. You're like, oh my god. And let me explain this real quick, because when I tell people how much I love this movie, everyone will tell you, oh, that movie's boring as shit. That movie's absolutely boring. And my answer is always, really? Set up a camera in your bedroom and film yourself sleeping and see what happens. And everyone I've told that to, like, fuck that, I'm not doing that. Exactly. Exactly. Because of all the horror movies you've seen, this one's the most plausible. This one's the one that, hey, might be happening, might not. Like, you're probably never going to be attacked by a disfigured dude with a chainsaw. Go out on a limb and say probably not going to happen. Pretty good chance you're not going to go to sleep and some, you know, dude who's been set on fire with razors as fingers is going to kill you in your sleep. I can say with complete certainty that will probably never happen to you. But everybody sleeps. And God forbid there's even a 1% chance that you see some creepy shit happening around you while you're sleeping, you'll never sleep again. And that's what made this movie so damn great. And Katie is just like, you watch her unravel through this entire movie, and she keeps like, no, there's something here, there's something here. And Micah's such a douche about it, and he's kind of making fun of her through this whole movie, which is almost why I wanted him dead. And then like half, they even call a psychic in the house, and the psychic is like, yeah, there's something here. And so they you know, well, what if we moved? And the psychic tells them, no, this thing isn't attached to the house, this thing is attached to Katie. So wherever you move, this thing's gonna follow you. Which just sets Katie off even more. Like, this poor thing was already unraveling as it was. And then when she hears that, she's just screwed. And Micah, again, just being a total douche, he's like, well, we should try to talk to it. And he tells her, like, I'm going to go out and I'm gonna buy a Ouija board. Which, where you buy a Ouija board, I have no idea. That's one thing I've never Googled. Where do you buy a Ouija board? But Micah says, I'm going to go out and buy a Ouija board. And Katie tells him, like, no, promise me you won't buy a Ouija board. And he's like, well, we need to talk to it. She's like, no, Micah, promise me you won't buy a Ouija board. I won't buy a Ouija board. So he borrows a Ouija board, which is even weirder than buying it. Who do you know that, hey, man, can I borrow your Ouija board this weekend? And again, Micah was such a douche. He's like, well, I promised you I wouldn't buy it. And I'm just like, I want him dead. I so want him dead. And they leave to go wherever they're going, and the camera stays focused on the room, and you see the pointer on the Ouija board start moving by itself. And it's just slowly moving and slowly moving, and then all of a sudden the fucking thing catches on fire. But that's what was great about this movie, was everything was just slowly happening. And it was subtle, and there was a build, and then here's where this started to creep me out. This was creep me the shit out. They're recording, and they're doing day one, day two, day three, blah, blah, blah. I want to say it was like around day 14 or so, they're recording themselves sleeping, and Katie sits up in bed, swings her legs off the bed, walks around to the other side of the bed where Micah's dumbass is sleeping, and she just stares at him. She just stands there and stares at him, and then all of a sudden you see the video start to speed up, and she fucking stared at him for like 3 hours. And what was great was that as she's staring at him, as the video speeds up, you see her kind of like rocking. And it, oh my god, that, it seriously creeped me out. Here's why. You don't have to be possessed by a demon to do that shit. That's something that can be as simple as sleepwalking, that might be some kind of mental illness like schizophrenia or something. You know, there's so many plausible reasons for this to happen that's what made it creepy as shit, because it could have been real. And several times she would get up and she would just stare at him for hours. And then one time she walks, just leaves the bedroom. And Micah, being the dipshit he is, just kept sleeping for like another 2 hours. He wakes up, finds Katie missing, and he goes to look for her, finds her sitting outside, and she has no idea. Like, she's just completely like in and out of sleep, like doesn't know where she's at. He takes her back into the house. The next day, she's talking about her back hurts, and there are teeth marks on her back. And these do not look like human teeth marks. Like, it looks like the teeth were all pointed. But again, it's just that little by little, this just keeps building and building and building. And here's the climax. Here's where I loved. So on day 20-something, 30-something, whatever it was, she gets out of bed, and you just see her walk out of the room. And then you just hear screaming. You hear her yelling, Micah. Micah freaks out, wakes up, runs out of the room, and then it's just still. There's just the video has the empty bedroom, and all of a sudden Micah comes flying back through the bedroom. He just flies out of the dark across the room, takes out the camera. The camera falls down, and as Micah's body like hits the camera and rebounds and clears the camera view, you have Katie just sitting there, or standing there. She's standing in the doorway, and she just slowly walks towards the camera, just expressionless. Face is just expressionless, and all of a sudden she smiles, and the smile gets real big, and it kind of like deforms the face, and she lunges at the camera. Credits. Fucking great. Absolutely great movie. Now, soon as that movie came out on Blu-ray, I bought that damn thing because I kept hearing about the alternate endings. This movie had so many alternate endings. So many. One of them, one of the alternate endings, and this is the one that freaks me out the most, is same thing. She gets up, stands there for 3 hours, walks out of the room. You hear the scream. You hear her yelling Micah's name. Micah goes running. There's a few seconds of silence. Micah's body flies back in the camera, takes out the camera. Katie walks up to the camera, just looks at the camera, tilts her head to one side, pulls her arm up, and she's holding a kitchen knife, and she just cuts her own throat and drops. That was my favorite. There's another ending that is completely implied. You don't see shit, but Katie gets up, walks out, screams, yells for Micah. Micah runs, and you hear police sirens. Cops, you hear the door get kicked in. You hear, you know, police identify themselves. You hear Katie crying, and then you hear the cops say, "Oh my God, what did you do? What did you do? Stay there." And they're telling her, "Stay there, stay there." And then you hear gunshots. So the implication is, cops were called, they kicked in the door, they find Micah dead, torn to shreds, whatever, and the cops see Katie's bloody body, Katie covered in blood, standing over Micah's body, and she's not complying, and the cops are forced to kill her. That was another ending they did. And I know at the beginning of this, I said the other Paranormal Activity movies were shit, but 2 was actually really good. 2 was really good because it directly tied into the first one in the sense that it's a different family. You think this is a different family. You have no idea how this relates to the first one. But then you find out that the mother in this family is sisters with Katie. They just had a baby, and for whatever reason, Katie, who's still wearing the pajamas from the first movie, so this is going on concurrently with the first movie. At the end of the movie, at the end of the second one, Katie shows up in her PJs from the first movie. She's covered in blood. She just walks into the house and snaps the husband's neck. I don't remember what happened to the wife, but she walks upstairs. She takes the baby, and the baby's crying. Like the baby, you know, it's a newborn baby. No, I want to say the baby was a couple months old. But anyway, the baby's just crying, and Katie picks up the baby, and as she's walking out, the crying and the wailing turns to giggling. I just gave myself chills when I thought of that, because the way the crying just suddenly turns to giggling, creepy as shit. So the first two Paranormal Activities are pretty good. Everything else is just turd in the punch bowl. Don't even bother. They're just shit. But yeah, so those are my 3 favorite underrated horror movies of all times. I'm sure as soon as I post this show, I'm going to think of like 5 more. But off the top of my head, those are going to be my 3. So, all right, folks. Made it through October. Posted a show every week. I'm shocked too. And hopefully I can keep up this trend. So, all right, I am Greg Hernandez, the Ninja Nerd Warrior, and you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. If you like this show, you know what? Give me a 5-star. Give me a rating. Give me a review. Recommend it to your friends, please. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or you can go straight to the NinjaNerdWarriorPodcast.com. And you know what? That's it. I am done for this week, and I will talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.